You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
Didn't even get a chance to talk about the Manchester Derby, which I know you were very keen to. What's your ideal outcome of that game, by the way?
Manchester United win, the no threat to Liverpool, and Manchester City are. It's as simple as that.
OTB AM. Live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Now, you're very welcome along. So OTB Sports is back for another series of in-depth chats with some of the biggest names in both Premier League and Irish football history. We'll have some behind-the-scenes access. We'll be talking to some of the legendary names from the biggest clubs, and we'll be meeting the crucial people behind the scenes who make a Premier League club what it is. Now, it's all in association with Cadbury FC, official global partner of Liverpool Football Club. And you can check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. Our guest this afternoon needs no introduction, not least to Liverpool fans. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the show Mr. Robbie Fowler. Robbie, you're very welcome. Great to have you with us.
Joe, how are you, pal? Okay?
Yeah, thanks very well. Me. So where in the world are you at the moment?
I'm back in the UK, mate. So I'm just sat in my kitchen. So it looks very clinical, to be fair, doesn't it? Yeah, it's
spotless.
I've been cleaning it all morning, mate, just for yourself. So,
okay, you're very house proud.
try to be.
Because you've been Australia, India in recent times. So you've been getting around the world. It must be nice to be home. Will this always be home whenever management is parked at some stage in the future? Will it always be around Liverpool?
Yes, I mean, I've had this base now for just over 20 years now. So no matter where I've gone, even when I was playing for Man City, I was living here and obviously commuting. Went back to Liverpool, I was here. Went to Cardiff and obviously Australia as a player. And then this was always my home. And then obviously I've needed to travel with football as well. So I think that's just the life of a football player and a football manager. You know, you've got to travel about and. You've got to go where the clubs want you. Basically, that's to be all and end all.
I would imagine walking down the streets of Liverpool when you were 22 was manic, and you were being chased and autographs and all that kind of thing. Now that you're 46, by the way, it's scary to have you as 46. I mean, where are the years going? Now that you're this age and maybe the hype has died down, is it a nicer experience walking through Liverpool?
Yes and no. Don't get me wrong. I think that there's going to be a time when no one's absolutely interested in me. And I think maybe that's the time to start worrying, Joe, in all honesty. But I'm quite lucky, whereas even when I was younger, I think people just used to see me and they just sort of leave me alone. Now, one of the problems I did have was, I didn't really get the fame that came with football, in all honesty, because I played football and didn't really associate anything other than football. But then it's all of a sudden people want a piece of you, you know, and your autographs, your pictures and, you know, and various other things. So, you know, it obviously goes with the territory and you just have to accept it. But I was very, very uncomfortable with it initially. It just wasn't for me. You know, I wanted to play football and only football, and I wasn't aware of everything that came with it. Obviously, I understand it now, and obviously as you get older and, you know, you go through the years and you know what football means and, you know, what you mean as a person, as a player to the people who come up to you. And in all fairness, you know, as much as I wasn't comfortable with it, you know, I would never swap it because it's given me such a great life, football. You know, it's given me things that I probably would have only, you know, dreamed of growing up. So, I'm not knocking it. And if I could go back and do it all again, Joe, then I would be on that first, you know, plane. I would be on that first time machine, and I would love to do it all again.
I guess it's a privilege, isn't it? Because it's funny you bring that up, because I was reading an interview you did in The Guardian a good while ago now, to be fair. This was 2005, and you were saying, I don't love going out. I get paranoid about people staring at me. Even now, I don't deal with people looking at me. I can't do it sometimes, can't go out. I don't know how to react when people stare. I mean, I can't relate, but I can imagine it's a strange experience if you feel like all eyes in the restaurant are on you.
Yeah, and it's probably more magnified now with obviously social media and, you know, and camera phones. And don't get me wrong, there wasn't many camera phones, certainly when I was growing up, and you know, come into the public eye. But nowadays, it seems, you know, every man, every woman, every dog has a camera phone, and he can, you know, snap you doing whatever. So, you know, at times there's a little bit of privacy that you want to have and you want to enjoy, but you know, at times you don't feel as though you can ever let yourself go, because you feel as though everyone is after a piece of you, and that could be in a good way or it could be in a bad way. Yeah. You know, someone's maybe wanting you to fall over so they can put something, you know, something. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm quite a level-headed lad, and you know, I love signing autographs. But there's days, and if anyone who's ever been in the public eye will tell you, you know, you're not perfect all the time, and there might be one moment where someone catches you off guard, and you know, it might be a picture with your eyes closed. It might be, you know, someone wanting an autograph and you've had a bad day. Oh, not today, mate. Or give us 10 minutes. And that one person will tell everyone that you're a nasty person, or you're this and you're that. I mean, I'll sit and have pictures and sign autographs for, you know, for everyone. But, you know, doesn't matter, because that one person who you don't sign, you know, an autograph for or a picture for, he's the one who will, you know, will tell everyone. And that's society today. And that one negative comment gets, you know, escalated unbelievably, and all of a sudden it's a different story then.
Really interested to talk about you and the management career. So I'm sure people have followed your career. You were in Brisbane, seemed to do really well in Brisbane, got manager of the month twice, pandemic hits, that puts an end to that. And then for the past year, give or take, you were with East Bengal in the Indian Super League. That was their first season up. That was maybe a more tricky time, and I guess that's management. But there was a quote I wanted to put to you. It was from Ray O'Donovan, who's out in Australia and has been for a long time. And he said, as a coach and manager, Robbie wanted a passing game, but also really structured defensively as well. He was a lot more structured than I thought he'd be. I expected more flowing attacking football because he was such a great instinctive striker. Now, I've got to say, I'd make the same assumption of you as a manager, that like things like structure and tactics and organisation wouldn't be in your wheelhouse. So that's an interesting insight into you as a manager. It's not quite the instinctive, let's just have a cut out there, as you, maybe you were at times as a younger player.
Yeah, I think you understand football, and you understand you're never really going to win games by being that gung-ho and attacking all the time. So you have to have a structure. You have to have a way of playing. In Australia, there was, I mean, it was obviously not my phrase, but it was phrased that it was called foulable. And we had a way of playing, and we had an identity, and I quite liked that. And you know, I think that's what your ethos and your mentality coming into the game as a coach or a manager. I think you've got to show people that you have that identity, you know, to maybe see different parts of the game, different sides of the game. Now, as much as I love scoring goals, I think, you know, you are getting the basis of a strong team if you're strong defensively. And that's what I wanted to do, you know, and I worked on the defence. I worked on, you know, the players in certain positions where, you know, you can go and attack when needed. But structurally, we need to be solid and we need to be sound. Right. We had a way of playing, and we had a lot of possession, but we won games as well, certainly over in Australia. But it was all about possession in the right half of the pitch. Now, you know, you look at football now, and there's a big emphasis on stats in terms of, this team had, you know, 60% possession. You know, the be all and end all, it doesn't matter, you know, what possession you've got. You know, the be all and end all is, listen, you need to put the ball in the back of the net and win games that way. But if you're, you know, passing the ball round the back all the time, the football becomes false. So you need to have a way of playing. And I wanted to get my stats in the opposition half, where, you know, we had obviously more entries into the final third. You know, you had more possession than any other team in that final third. And I think they're the stats you maybe should be looking at, as opposed to just passing the ball around just for the sake of it. Because it's a little bit false. It's a false narrative. And people, I think people can see through that. So, yeah, we have a structure. We have a way of playing. We have that identity. But we want to play the right way. You know, we want to be, you know, creating overloads in wide areas where, I mean, look at now, certainly Premier League football, and I don't, you know, be a well, trying to advocate what the managers should and shouldn't be doing. But a lot of teams now seem to want to go, you know, centrally, you know, try and break teams down in the centre of the pitch. Now, for me, it's difficult because when you're coming up against teams and they maybe play with three centre-halves or maybe three midfielders, the centre of the pitch is where all the people are, and that's where it's, you know, there's more bodies there. So for me, you've got to try and create areas in the wide positions where you can create those overloads, where you can get maybe two on one or three on two. And that way, the emphasis on creating more chances that way. So that's what we wanted to do, and that's what we try to do all the time.
So you've done all your badges, which is not an easy thing to do, by the way, and you've uprooted yourself and maybe your family at times in Australia and India. So that shows a real seriousness here about your dedication to the craft and trying to make it as a manager, which maybe people might be surprised by. So why management and you know, why hasn't it happened for you maybe a bit closer to home, I wonder?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not really for me to say, but I mean, what you've said there, Joel, is spot on. I'm prepared to work harder. I'm prepared to, you know, to go and show people that I've got the credentials to go and be a top manager and be a top coach. I've managed in three countries now, so people think I'm maybe an experienced, but, you know, I managed in Thailand. You know, I took over a team. We were third in the league. We ended up finishing third, and we got to the FA Cup final. Australia was, I took over a team who, I think, finished second bottom, you know, the year before I took over. I came over, I had, you know, a clear identity, a clear pathway of what I wanted to do. And, you know, we made the team ultra competitive, and we won games, and, you know, we ended up qualifying for the Asian Champions League. Then obviously the pandemic took over, and then, you know, funds were running low within the league, you know, within the club, because the league sponsors were pulling out, which wasn't ideal. So I need to come home. But because I've done so well in Australia, I didn't really want to sit around and, you know, and just, you know, sit on my behind and be happy with what I'd done. I wanted to get out there and I wanted to progress and wanted to grow a little bit more. And that's where the opportunity came over, you know, from India. Now, I took over a team who were in the league below the ISL. But obviously the new owners came in and they wanted to go into the big league. And we done that. So that's when I came in. So I went over to India. We had quarantine for, you know, for 2 weeks. We had 10 days pre-season with a team who was built for the league below. The Indian players, I couldn't have any, you know, say in the players that we were brought in because they were already there. They were already under contract. I had a say in the foreign players that we brought in. And I brought, you know, competitive and good foreign players into the mix. And we finished ninth, a real respectable ninth position for a team that should have been rock bottom. And we were competitive. I think we lost one game by more than one goal, or maybe two games. But, you know, we done exceptionally well, really did. And it doesn't sound, sorry, Joel, I know you're trying to talk there. I can talk, mate, sorry. I know it doesn't sound, but when you finish ninth in the team that we did, I mean, I can't stress how unbelievably a good achievement it was.
Fair enough. I take that point because I maybe didn't do that justice. What experience do you have then of knocking on doors in England? Have you applied for many jobs, or what's been your experience on that front?
I've applied for a few and obviously nothing back. So it is what it is. And
as in not even interviewed?
Not even. I've had a few emails back off clubs saying, "Oh, listen, we're going down a different pathway or a different entity," but I've not had an interview.
Right.
Now I'm not sitting here moaning, and you know, it's not for me to say that, but I'm a big believer in, you know, if you're an owner, you're a chairman, and you've got these visions and these plans, and you want to bring someone else in, absolutely no problem with that. You know, fair enough, because I know if it was my club and my money. And I'd wanna bring in whoever I wanted to, whether he's got a pro license or whether he's got an A license, it doesn't matter. You know, it's you know, you live and die by that sword that you want to, you know, that you want to do.
I wonder, does your reputation as Jack the Lad, you know, younger days go against you a little bit in this respect? Maybe owners don't realise how serious you've been about this.
You know what, Joe, it probably does, in all fairness, in all honesty. But I mean, in my defence there, I think, you know, I was in a team, and okay, I I was serious when I needed to be. Now, I was never one who wanted to be serious all the time because I think that would have had an adverse effect on my performance. Now, when I needed to perform and when I needed to train, of course I did that. But you have this perception, this this rule where you think that you're messing all the time and you're not. Mm-hmm. And I think every dressing room in world football, even now, probably needs a character like myself. You know, someone who will try and, I know, try and make or put everyone at ease a little bit. You know, because I think if you're serious all the time, I think it takes away the fundamentals of the enjoyment of football.
Sure.
You know, we all enjoy football, but if you're straight-laced and serious all the time, then that takes a little bit away, the romanticism of that enjoyment of football. And I was never like that all the time. Mm. And maybe it has gone against me. But the factors that you mentioned before, Joe, I've gone down the route of going B license, A license, you know, my pro license. That's almost 8 years of, you know, dedication of wanting to show people how much I want it.
No, to be fair, it's not like you're saying I'm Robbie Fowler, I was good at football, give me a job. You know, it's the opposite end of the spectrum.
No, absolutely. And that's why I went to Thailand. That's why I went to Australia. And that's why I went to India. So for an inexperienced manager who's managed in three countries, I'm not doing too bad, who's done okay in three countries as well.
And will you stick at this, Robbie? Say it doesn't quite happen for you in England for whatever reason. Is there just like a thirst there to be involved in football at a decent level? So if it means travelling, you'll travel. Or where are you in terms of the management experience and the next 10, 15 years?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I want to go as far as I can. And of course, I'd love to be over here. But if an opportunity comes overseas again, you know, I will go there as well, right? Because I think I've shown people that I'm dedicated enough and I want to do it. But, you know, I'd be confident of obviously getting in front of, well, not confident getting in front of someone, but if I was in front of a chairman or an owner, I'd be confident of saying all the right things and doing all the right things in an impressive point of view, the way I want to play, the way I want to, you know, my teams to be, you know, from whether it be first team level right through to to involving academies as well. So I've got a lot to give, and you know, I'd be confident of saying all the right things and doing all the right things.
So there's obviously something in you that maybe misses football or misses competition, because it would be, I'm sure, tempting for a lot of people in your position at your age. Well, I don't need the money necessarily. I can put the feet up. I can play my golf, do a bit of punditry if I want. An easy life is what I'm saying, because management's not an easy life. So what is it you're kind of chasing? Is it the competition or do you miss the dressing room? What is it that attracts you to management?
I think it's a bit of everything. I think the big attraction is football. Now, I've played a game, you know, at a top level for years and years, and I enjoyed the game and I loved the game, and it wasn't work for me. It was a hobby that I loved doing. You know, I got paid, you know, really well for doing something that I loved. And now, not everyone falls into that bracket or category of playing football for the right reasons. People want to do it because they want to earn money. They want to do. And look, there's nothing, you know, I'm not having a go at them. You know, everyone's different. But I've got a lot to give. I love the game. I want to be involved day to day. I want to be on that training pitch. I want to win games because I still have that incredible desire and that appetite to go out there and get my teams to perform and get the right results, because I want to make people happy. Now, that sounds an unbelievably cliched answer. It really does. But I know that when I get results, I know that I can make lots of people happy. And there's a lot to that. There's a lot to football as opposed to just going out there and putting that, you know, the training kit on and going out there. You know, you're setting teams up, of how you want to play. You're doing all the work behind the scenes of how you know, the other teams play. And, you know, that end game, if you like, of getting that result, I mean, it's such a high.
Yes.
And you get that buzz and that, you know, that euphoria just hits you. And when you're like that, you can imagine what the people who have been going to the game for years, for some people, it's more than life for them. And like a good result from you, that particular game, I mean, it can make people's, you know, days, it can make people's weeks until that next game. And I'm aware of all that. And I love being part of that process.
That is Robbie Fowler speaking to Joe as part of our latest Cadbury FC Roadshow. Loads more to come from that chat with Robbie, including his ultimate five-a-side team, His main criteria for selection, they had to be Scousers and they had to be his mates, so you might be able to guess who he ends up choosing. I've got some money on Jason McAteer in that. I think Jason McAteer. No, he's not making it. McAteer. Oh, Jason, we're sorry, man. We couldn't convince him to put you in. Ooh, sting. Okay, we're going to bring you the rest of that conversation with Robbie over the next few days on OTB. Get onto our social channel, subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram, and you won't miss any of that Robbie Fowler goodness. It is all with thanks to Cadbury FC, the official global partner of Liverpool Football Club. You can also check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways.